But everything is just okay, we don't have to worry. She sounds good. Okay. Alright.
Zip it up. And off we go. I'll say the same thing I told Shayna. Whenever it's convenient to come and get me, come and get me. I don't have to wait until some arbitrary time. She always says, oh, geez, Jesse's going to get mad. That's great. Okay. So Shayna needs to come early so she doesn't have to fight it later. That's great. Have a great day, guys. See you this afternoon. I love you too. Bye-bye. Okay. We got the recording. Oh. I didn't realize my walking stick is bent. I haven't even beat off a dog with it yet. Oh boy. What a wonderful day. Alright. Yeah. See, why do people have me? As if that's supposed to help me or help them. I don't get that. Is it honking to make sure I don't jump out in front of them? Or maybe it's somebody I know. It's hard to say. Let's see. Well, what's going on this morning? I had to work on the fuse yesterday. These are shoes that I got resold. $75. They're great shoes though. And I they were flat. You know how most shoes have a little contour on the inside? Well, these didn't. They're just flat soled on the inside. And, I had to get used to that. The first couple days I wore them, I split one of the seams on it. I was trying to figure out how to fix that because I just paid $75 for it. So it wasn't something I wanted to get rid of particularly. And I got out the Gorilla Glue, and where the seam used to be, I just glued it, and it's done really well. And so, I've been using the shoes. I walk with them now every day. These are my main shoes. I have different shoes. I got some more rock for Sunday, but they were obviously cheaper. They're obviously crappier. I originally got these shoes for like $15 at Goodwill in Albuquerque years ago. Many years ago. And they're my main shoes for a long time until the soles finally went out. They have holes in them. Then during the winter I switched over to my other shoes. More of my work shoes. Which have a little bit of a steel toe to them, I guess. But then those shoes gave out. You have to understand, the first soles on any shoes are cheap. Usually hollow. Now these weren't, that's why they lasted for so long. Because they weren't, they weren't hollow soles. So the other ones I got, they were hollow soles. I'm not sure if I'm ever going to get them resold. I'm going to hang on to them. You know, good solid leather upper. So we'll keep working on that. Or I'll hang on to it until at some point I might have enough money to get them resold. Although I'm sure if I gave them to somebody, they'd say these are cheap coffee shoes. Not worth, or not even able to put new soles on them. So anyway, I'm gonna change hands again with my walking stick. Different kind of workout for my left side. Let's see. Well, I had made a decision a few days ago, or I've been trying to make a decision a few days ago, that I could go ahead and still make decent progress on everything. You know, school and work. Shetland project, which has got a heavy school function to it, and then a presentation for a, you know, at a technology conference. That was the most interesting stuff. Anyway. So, I found it interesting, my dad has always lived out of town, typically lived out of town, and I had always had the desire to live out of town just because it's a little more loosey-goosey, a little more free, you can do a few more things than you would normally do. You know, you don't have to seek permission from your neighbors to do it. And, it was interesting. One of my normal calls to my dad and my brother, Joe. And, I kind of caught it for the whole thing. I don't remember which one really got on to me. Joe was just getting on to me about nearly everything. So I don't know if it was just him having a bad day, which I will chalk it up to. But then I start thinking about, you know, living out of town has got some downsides to it. The twins always used to go over to other people's houses or invite other people over to our house. That was traditional. And, and now they really can't do that particularly. In fact, the one family that was close enough that they could go visit, they had a pool. We used to be the ones with the pool. Now we aren't. It was a great time while we had it, though. Although I must say that I only used it probably. I didn't use it very much. In the last couple of years, it just ended up to me being a maintenance nightmare. The only time I got into it was to try to vacuum it out or to kill an algae bloom in it. So, we just gave it away to somebody and I think they just threw it away. Which is sad. I got a lot of use out of that pool. We even replaced the bladder once. I think we had the pool for probably about 6 or 7 years. I think we only put it up for 5 years. In 2012, we didn't put it up because we were staying the night to get ready to go to Shetland. In 2013, this year, you know, we were moving. So that kind of fell apart. But things are pretty good. And, so, being out of town, it's kind of tricky. The boys would probably spend more time at the library during the summer, although I'd have to say that we made the trip in the car every day. Of course, it'd be nice for Lisa if they could just go without her having to get involved with it. Well, anyway. So, I think we've been looking at being back in town again. It seems like all the reasons, many of the reasons for leaving Tucumcari in the first place have kind of dimmed a bit. I think Lisa kind of likes the security of having neighbors nearby. Although we don't do a lot with our neighbors at all. I think if Lisa had more convenient neighbors, it might go better. So, let's see. What else is going on? Let's see. Current events in the world. We are middle of a partial government shutdown. Congress is doing what Congress is doing, and the president's getting all pissy about it. And it's like, you know, Barack Obama's been a very disappointing president. I mean, I am not a Barack Obama fan at all. I never voted for him. I'm a libertarian. He is definitely nothing like a libertarian. And, but when it came to ideas like a little better social equality, a little better concern for the poor beyond just using them as political props, you're hoping for good things, and all you got was, I've called him for a long time on recordings too, Silky Milk Chocolate, because that's exactly what he is. Like that little dollop of chocolate that tastes really good when you stick it in your mouth, but then it's gone. It's gone, and when it's gone, it's like, well, what was all that about? Because, you know, these things are paid for with a certain price. When you look at the world of progress, I would say that there has been no progress at all. When people look back and they say, so how is the, what were the accomplishments of Barack Obama's presidency? And the only thing you can really look at is Obamacare. That they keep shoving further and further back into the future so that nobody will have to accept the political fallout. Nobody, there's nobody who says that there won't be political fallout from it, or that there won't be damage done. Nobody's saying that. It's just a question of how bad is it going to hurt, and when. So, and that's really the only thing he's ever done, and chances are, and the only thing is that they called it after him, Obamacare. That may end up being his only claim to fame from being president for 8 years. And you say, well, he stopped the wars, and you go, no, he didn't. The wars have been protracted through his entire presidency. He didn't stop them. They were petering out anyway. It's like Richard Nixon taking credit for stopping the Vietnam War, and you go, no, he just happened to be there when we gave up. And that's kind of going to be what this is, and that's fine, you know. I think it was a foolish endeavor. All of them have been foolish endeavors. I don't think we've engaged ourselves in any kind of activity, military activity, it's been worthwhile ever. You know, the last ones were the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812, when we were invaded and we had to defend ourselves. you know, I say, oh, well, what about World War II? And you go, we weren't invaded. So, you know, you'll never hear the real story, the fact-filled story, but what you can know is just that this stuff was a machination. And that Weber, whether FDR drug us into World War II, or our own action in China, which most people have never heard of. We were heavy in China, trying to help the Chinese nationalists. Chiang Kai-shek, was that his name? Chiang Kai-shek? Anyway, the Chinese nationalists who ended up going to Taiwan, actually where Taiwan came from. It was a lot of our help and our assistance. And it was really kind of a fight against communism. The fact that we, that not only did our alliance, ultimate alliance with Russia, not curtail the worst Stalinism, with you people. Down the road. They can wait. They come over in the passing lane driving 40 miles an hour still, so somebody can do 70 around them. Oh, good. I wouldn't do it. I guess it's considered to be kindly. Not bad. Oh, 56 degrees. It's already 6:30. And I'm not doing well at all. So, Obama can't take credit for stopping any of these wars because he didn't, you know, he didn't make an effort to do it. He just announced what was already reality. We're being thrown out of Afghanistan. We've already been thrown out of Iraq. There's nothing can be done without, you know, raising the diplomatic ire of the United States as, you know, as God's appointed master of all things. You know, and they say, well, we're pulling out of Afghanistan so they can see their own country. And you go, we're pulling out because they've won us out. Trust me, as usual, we've long overstayed our welcome. Very few people want us to still be around. Now, the fact that there's going to be diplomatic, you know, is always a face saving. The most important thing to do with anything around with anything around, you know, having the United States involved in your life is that it's a, I don't even call it a two-edged sword. It's typically a one-edged sword, and the sharp, and the cutting side is pointed toward you. America only attacks and takes over countries that can obviously dominate easily. And that it can sit there and pretty much dictate all the terms to. And I've been really impressed by these small countries that just come back and go, get out. We're not going to renew the lease for your air bases. We're not gonna, you know, get out. Yeah, I'm trying to say it in nice terms, you know, provide opportunities for everybody to save face on it. Because if you throw egg in America's face, is America like a petulant little thug gonna retaliate? Oh, heck yeah! Absolutely! You can never depend on the United States of America, its government, or frankly, most of its people, to be able to take a mature attitude toward just about anything. You know? It just doesn't exist. So when Barack Obama behaves the way he does, he tries to sound the erudite voice of reason, but he's not. He's just as bad as anybody else is. Oh, gas prices went down again. Now it's $3.29. Excellent. This has been gradually dropping for probably a month or so. I hope the trend continues. Oh. That and the report I heard just the other day that the United States has surpassed the Middle East and Russia as the dominant source of oil. We produce more oil than anybody else does. Wow. Of course, that's all somewhat based on prices and stuff. If the price of a barrel of oil dropped a much, I would imagine we'd shut down most of our capacity because of the question of scarcity. We seem to thrill at giving and taking away. Kind of hygiene a rich person can pull. Normal people just continue doing what they're doing and they roll with the punches. When you're rich enough, you can play games. Like, say, for instance, Scotland, the Highland Clearances, for instance. You know, there was the land of crossing. Tenant farming. There was no reason. I mean, the guys who were there, the wealthy landowners that were there, could have very well continued that situation. It wasn't becoming all of a sudden untenable for them, and they were forced into a position that they couldn't run anymore. They decided to play the game of, hey, I'm rich. If I turn this all into pasture land for sheep, which don't need, you know, which don't need very many people working them, I'll make more money doing sheep. So they changed the entire economy simply based on, I'm not rich enough. You know, hey, it's their land, they can, I suppose, do what they wish. They displaced a ton of people to do it. I'm sure they cooked up several explanations for why what they were doing was okay and would actually be a good thing. Kind of hard pressed to see that. But yeah, reading some articles about how things are changing, and there's, you know, the middle class is disappearing. I'm not in the middle class. I'm trying to break into it at the magic time when it's disappearing. I'm trying to follow patriarchal blessing. I'm not applying a lot of economic thought to it because I don't have much faith in economic thought. I have more faith in God than I have in economic thought. It sounds cocky, and I guess it is, to say that that I'm going to I'm tired of being poor. Is it important to be over on my side of the plane? Interesting. Anyway, so we're seeing now every single machination there can be for not caring about people and being much more concerned about profit. And everybody's doing it. Everybody's doing it. I don't know anybody that's not doing it. And playing tricky games all the while. Nothing is immune. We were playing Wentworth Stones a couple of nights ago. The missionaries came over and Lisa wanted to share this with them. And the basic prize for it is M&M's, however many words you get right in the game is how many M&M's you get. And so we got the M&M's. I was looking at them. I said, Did you get those little mini ones? because the elves are the regular size now. And they're physically smaller. They used to be bigger around, maybe a quarter of an inch around. Now they're down to like 3/8 or like, how much would that be? 3/16? Yeah, they're down around 3/16 probably. Obviously smaller. That just goes to see an overall trend of, you know, you'd rather trick people than to stand behind your product, though. And I find that interesting. Because people say, oh, we do it so we don't have to raise the prices. So people can still have them at the old price. And you go, but every time these things happen, both things happen. The quality, the size, something goes down, and the price goes up. So it's like, I'm sorry, I don't get your argument. I don't believe it for a second. You guys are you're playing a game. And that's all it is. It's marketing and tricks. At the same time, they say we've had to reduce the size to keep price down. Then they come back and they go, well, you know, but we also have to raise the price too. And you go, you know, if I was in a position where price was going to have to raise anyway, I'd rather keep my quality and my size standard up and advertise on that barely. Rather than look like a chiseler twice. But, you know, that's the way business is now. Everything's junky. Let's see, what else is going on? Anyway, so, yeah, that's happened. Let me see, I got off the Obama not doing much thing. It's sad. You know, I think many elections, I don't think the last presidential election was particularly fraught with anything. It was a scare fest. Said Barack Obama trying to be inspiring. He was just trying to scare people. You know, tactical fright to not vote for his opponent. And he nearly lost. You know, people say, oh, he won. And you go, barely. Because, you know, I didn't find much of what, Romney was saying. I voted for Romney because my wife asked me. I'm a libertarian. My intent is to vote for a libertarian-style candidate. Doesn't have to be from the Libertarian Party. Because I know that my vote is inconsequential. So my wife asked me to vote for Romney, so I did. You know, doesn't matter. My vote was just as inconsequential then, too. I don't think I've ever voted for a winner. The only vote that I regret is the vote I did for the guy that did win. I regret that vote. I voted for George W. Bush the second time. He pushed my button, so I voted for him, and I regret that. Won't do it again, promise. Not that I won't vote for a major candidate. But I am very much a Harry Brown libertarian who passed away years ago. He said the most important thing was the libertarian brand. Which is, they may be a pathetic, pandering party sometimes. I wish they were a little more principled. But to proclaim yourself a libertarian, every time that L column of elections goes up a little bit, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. It means we're making progress. So, I stick to that. It isn't even a question of who's running. When I voted for Bush, it was because the Libertarian candidate, Michael Badnarik, had pulled a couple of just publicity stunts, gotten himself thrown into jail a couple of times. And that put me off of him. So, you know. I don't know. It becomes a question of leadership, and you don't often see it. In fact, I think it's really quite rare. And if people say, oh, well, Obamacare is great leadership. He's really going to take care of some things. You go, no, it won't. They say, it's going to saddle us with an obligation given over to Congresses that lie, bully, and cheat, to spend orders of magnitude more than what a budget ever said they spent. Borrow prodigiously, and then share what they've done, and you go, there's no leadership there, but we shouldn't expect leadership from those bodies. We should be expecting leadership from the president. And like I said, you know, Barack Obama was not a vote for leadership. It was a vote for blacks. It was a vote for a guy who wanted to be a super senator. very inexperienced in any way, in any fashion. He became a lawyer simply so that he could be a politician. I don't think he ever practiced law anywhere. I don't even know if he passed the bar anywhere. He went to school for the law. What politician doesn't? You know, the only saving grace is that that he was so pathetic of a leader, they really couldn't get anything passed. Healthcare was never an issue upon which he campaigned. In fact, when it came to campaign time, the second time after he had passed it, he rarely brought it up. You know, it was done, it was passed, and he had made sure that its implementation would safely be after the next election. And he's rarely talked about it. But then again, it was also because the Republicans didn't talk much about it. Because I don't think they considered it, I think they were trying to gauge whether it was an issue worthy of being gotten into. Now, you know, the Republican candidate, Romney, he came out and said that one of his first acts would be to veto Obamacare. Interesting, because a lot of Obamacare was what he enacted in Massachusetts as governor, what he fought for. And the pathetic reasons why he gave for the fact that he basically supported that plan and isn't supporting this plan were part of why people were just totally uninspired by him. I think Mitt Romney would have made a fine president. Do I think he would have been very effective? I have no idea. I think it's almost impossible for a president to be effective. I think if Barack Obama couldn't use the office of the presidency to effectively do something, that I don't think anybody could have. And not because of how amazing Barack Obama is. It was because he's the golden child. The one great disappointment for Democrats, as far as I know, is how little Obama was able to do, or chose to even attempt. I think that's the bigger thing. I think he knew he was the golden child, and he expected that to basically, you know, rule the day. That whatever he asked for, he was going to get. I think he is a master bungler. I'm not saying I would be any better, but then again, I'm not purporting to be any better. He put forth what might have been considered a clear plan, but then he never worked on it a bit. Everything that ultimately got done was stuff that he never talked about until all of a sudden it came up. And, you know, what did all ultimately constitute? Political wrangling. You know, it was something that other people had been working on for a long time, and he decided to get on board when it felt like, when it sounded good, when it sounded consistent with with the vote he drew. And it was a slam dunk. You know, it's kind of like being a certain kind of basketball player. Once you see the opening, and there's an easy layup to be made, he's your man. He'll gladly be in that hole, in that opening, and make that layup for you, even though any bozo could have made that layup. That's the point. This is a man that doesn't seem to really take many risks at all. You know, driven by the same kind of motivations that we'd always hoped that he wouldn't have been driven by, and what he said he wouldn't be driven by. And he lied. But most people don't see that. Most of his basic supporters will go on an archaeological dig to find good things to say about him. When you go, that's the problem, you have to go on an archaeological dig to say anything nice, or to say anything positive about him, about his, quote, leadership. I don't know how long it's been since we had a president of the United States that was actually a leader, as opposed to, you know, simply a political hack. How long has it been since we had somebody who actually had a stance and stuck with it, even when it was politically, you know, politically unsuitable. And I think, you know what? I have to give some credit to a universally unlike American president, probably Jimmy Carter. I think you can always tell what people really are, what people really stand for, or if people are really genuine, or if they're just political cardboard cutouts, by how they behave once they leave office, for instance. And if it's consistent with what they were working for it in their presidency, you know, hallelujah for them. Good job. A person of character, you rarely see those, especially in those kinds of circumstances. I think Jimmy Carter was one of the leaders. Now, you may question whether he was a good American president. I have no idea. I was too young. Came from a family that was firmly in the other party, so didn't have anything nice to say about him anyway, for political reasons. And, let's see. So anyway, so here's my thought. Let's see what Barack Obama does after he leaves office here in how many more years. What, do I got 2 more years left? A little over 2 years? 2.5? I don't think it's even that. So. Like, let's say, George W. Bush. You know, hasn't done much of anything. Did a little bit at the Haiti earthquake. Got together with the old president, retired president, whatever, former president, and did fundraising, you know. But since then, you know, I don't know. And that's fun. Maybe the things that they care about are not very, are not very, you know, outgoing, showy. Which is a shame because with that much time, that much clout that a former president can usually still sustain, be able to do something with that. That's why. I don't know. Jimmy Carter may have been a good one for that way. You may not have agreed with any of his policies or his politics at all. But you have to say, you have to give the man credit for being a true believer in a world where politicians will change their stripes on a dime, given a public opinion poll, he is refreshingly different. So we'll see what Barack Obama does. I will be totally surprised to see, who this guy end up really being. I think most of them go into seclusion because, number one, they can. And number two, they are. They're cardboard cutouts. And they have the kind of problems that cardboard cutouts have. I mean, look at most of your athletes. Yesterday I watched a couple of, Artist Studio, Inside Artist Studio, where they actually have schools where people learn about filmmaking, stuff like that. And that's pretty good at bringing stars. You know, big box office people, and roasting them and gushing all over them and telling how wonderful they are. And someone with Sly Stallone, which was really quite interesting. Sly is much more of a screenwriter than he is an actor. Although he really works on it. He seems to be really diligent about the craft of the thing. You know, not terribly articulate guy. But you have to understand, actors don't even have to begin to be articulate. They're crafted. You can sound brilliant and amazing when there's six or seven guys writing every single word you say, and sculpting every single move you make. It's not hard to look amazing. It's not hard to be intimidated by somebody by some character on a screen, because you have to understand, that person is so stilted And then you meet these people in an unscripted situation, relatively unscripted situation, and they're just. There's just empty shells of people. You know, when you said you keep seeing to get to stay married. They're constantly being overcome by alcohol and tobacco, drugs. You know, you have to understand what acting requires. Acting requires you to be plastic. You know. You can't have strong ideas about hardly anything. It ruins your career. You know, there's only been a few actors that could really get away with it. And they're mostly from the old days. When you were under contract to a studio. It was easier then. I'm not saying it was useful at all to be that way. To have an intelligent actor is to have a contradiction in terms. They aren't really wanted. They want you because of your pretty face or because of your pretty voice. Mostly it's the face you think. They can dub in different voices. You know what's important by how they choose to do things. When you find out later that somebody else's voice was used in a movie, what matters? Because usually that voice dub in isn't even in the credits because they want to give you the illusion that this is really who this person is. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's first movie, he was dubbed. And he was just pretty to look upon. Mostly, this is a muscle guy. He was a big muscle. You know? He didn't have to ask. He didn't have to be amazing. One of his most iconic characters was Conan the Barbarian. And one of the big things about Conan was that he was a big muscle. Arnold did the voice. He did it naturally. He sounded, you know, he sounded like kind of an ignoramus. But that didn't matter. He had the muscle. He won the day because he beat everybody else out. And he was good with the sword. You know, there were smarter people than he was. He would overcome it just through sheer force. And that was the, I guess that was ultimately the allure of it. You know, so, acting really is about faces, and about malleability. I watched for a little bit the one by Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp is so strung out on exotic tobacco, and I'm pretty sure it's laced with other crap. The interesting thing was that the camera kept focusing on this thing. He was constantly smoking this stuff. And I don't know what it was. They were obviously trying to show off what brand it was. It was almost like product placement, as far as I was aware of. And that it was decided upon before the show that you had to highlight, like, here's a property of this tobacco company. And he smoked it constantly. And he was really just like some obnoxious 6-year-old. You know, amiable 6-year-old. That when you ask them, well, how do you feel about this, they'd give a one-word answer. It was just made to be, you know, offbeat. You know, it didn't indicate, you rarely get any intelligence out of these people. Because that's not what wins an award. In fact, I think it's a detriment. I'm amazed by somebody like, oh, Ben Affleck or somebody, who actually got into acting through screenwriting. You know, same as Sylvester Stallone. For how it was done. Everybody gets pulled into what they get pulled into. You have to understand, we're all manipulated. Any of us who think that we're independent thinkers, or that we, or that we are independently intelligent or whatever, you know, you're really barking up a tree here. We're mostly formed by our alliances, who we tend to associate with. And what intelligence we have is probably spend the bulk of it justifying what is probably pretty apparent apologetic, you know? What we apologize for. And trying to make what's either a poor statement or bad thinking try to appear good, you know. Humans are a pretty loyal bunch. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. But it's hard to tell what's useful to be loyal to. And that's when loyalty works against you, because you don't want to, you know, it's natural not to want to look like a fool as well. It's natural to want a lot of these things. And, we tend to turn into apologists almost immediately. trying to save ourselves from ourselves. Just make it look good, and some don't make it look good. And I'm not even saying that's a virtue to make it look good. I'll be the first to say it probably doesn't. Probably isn't very close at all. So yeah, that's even politics. Interesting. So. Sad part is these become our heroes, so so we think adopting their wings will be the right course to take. And it's not. I think to be famous is trouble from the past. I think to have done a great thing is worth more. I'm not kind of hoping for this whole Shetland project. I would like to think. I'd like to see, you know, that it doesn't become a, you know, an I did this sort of thing. And that you don't want people to hang out there anymore. So people say, well, why'd you do it? They go, I like Shetland. I wanted to live there. It was going to be difficult. You know, the times were not appropriate to it. It seemed like that if you could get yourself there somehow. And put yourself into that culture that that would get you there. on some level. And you go, so that was one of my purposes for doing it. I was wanting to take care of several things off of it. But yeah, you know, my intention was not to get rich. You know, if Eternal Blessing says that I'll be comfortable and be able to affect the lives of others due to my life's work, I'm trying to make what I do, what I have been doing, what I seem to be pretty good at, which is confused, into something a little more purposeful than just fixing computers. You know, sometimes I've said, you know, all I do all day is fix people's access to their porn or whatever else they're doing. I wanted to be somebody who tried to make something ennobling about computers. So, I want to work on that. And insofar as it provides a livelihood, and maybe even a good livelihood, is a wonderful thing. And very welcome. So, I look forward to that on a certain level. Trying to make my life more purposeful. You gotta tie your shoes. There we go. So I think that's where Shetland, the Shetland thing is going. Kind of look at it, it feels better. Yeah. Black Cat has crossed my path. Oh my gosh. I am surely due to die. Holy free holy. Anyway, what else is going on? But no, yeah. So instead of working on schoolwork, which can sit and wait until the 1st of November when I get back into it and there's not some kind of weird thing to do with it. And I want to do this presentation. And I think I want to be one of those kinds of guys too. There's going to be presentations to be done. I need to get better at that. And if I'm going to be managing anything, it's going to be managing Shetlandic.info. And working hard to make it into something useful and something fulfilling. I really do want it to become a resource. And a working resource, you know, so many libraries are just ignored. You know, you buy a ton of books, put them in the library, you're gonna check out the best sellers. So you pour most of your money into best-selling fiction. Libraries do very little anything with their books. You know, most of the good stuff that comes out of a library is the enrichment activity. Doesn't really speak making somebody more intelligent. It's that trick to try to trick people into doing something that might make them more brilliant, or try to improve them any. And I think in the midst of our efforts to do that, we shortchange those who are authentically seeking for something at the expense of trying to compete with television or movies or, you know, stuff you don't have a prayer of competing against. So, anyway, like this university, interesting twist on several things. Been watching Sabrina the Teenage Witch, gotten to the point where she becomes she finally finished high school. The series went much further than anybody ever suspected it would. So they keep on having to reinvent this show. And it's interesting to watch. It really shows college as being more of a party thing than anything else. And so every college has to almost cultivate, at least to a small degree, a party atmosphere, or else they won't get new students. You know, and you're going, well, you know, boy, in the old days of college, university, and you go, no, not in the old days. That's always what universities did. You know, medieval stories are replete with the kind of chicanery that we're accustomed to seeing through here. It's only a continuation. If you think we've somehow devolved, you know, you're exactly what you used to do. You know, we've made college more accessible to more people, but it's still basically a frat boy's wet dream, you know. Oh, good morning.
Hi. Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Oh, yeah, that's me. Walking around. How late is it? Oh, it's not doing well. Okay. Okay. day three of walking. You can muscle through this period. You'll be fine. So when it parts. The door open. Turn on half the light. Oops, wrong half. Here we go. Still like a lot of light. I'm ready for warm days to end, cool days to start. It's getting better. Oh. But not fast enough. Oh, interesting. Okay, talk to you later.